back to another edition of Hey, How'd You Get That Music Job? I'm your hostess with the mostest, L. Ariel, and here we are, season two on episode two. How is everyone doing? I'm going to try not to mention the big P word and try not to mention the letters C and V. I know it's a really nutty time right now, but let's just pretend we're all having a really nice, lovely weekend, and we're just going to listen to a great podcast. So welcome back. So glad you're here. I'm excited to introduce you to my next guest. His name is Mojo, and I think of him as the epitome of the indie musician. He is a self-taught singer, songwriter, musician. He is a producer. He is a self-taught engineer. And he also is host of the popular DIY Music Chat on Twitter and also co-host of the weekly podcast, Indie Music Podcast. So this guy's a busy man, and he's going to tell us all about his music trajectory, his music journey and career trajectory in music, because it's really interesting. He's still working the day job, but man, is he... He is all over the indie music scene, and it's just a really good chat. But before we do that, we are actually going to play a track from the one and only Mojo. Here's Lost in the Fog.
The road ahead is lost in the fog, but I press on anyway. Trust the road, trust myself as well, and trust the time will show me the way.
Hey, Mojo. Welcome to Hey, How'd You Get That Music Job?
Hey, well, thank you very much for having me on.
Yeah, excited. Let's talk about first things first, that way back, or maybe not so far back, but tell me about your childhood, about music. Like, what was that look like?
Well, I don't come from a musical family at all. I come from like a family of teachers and kind of like closet artists, perhaps, like people with like latent artistic ability, but maybe not that they did anything with, as you kind of mentioned, that maybe they had aspirations once and then left it and never went back. Like my mom wanted to be a fashion designer, but I never heard that until I was like in high school and found her old sketchbooks. And I was like, what is this? So I later on in life wanted to be a graphic designer. That's a whole different tangent, but I did used to raid her record collection, and I just would listen to, you know, the Beatles and Simon and Garfunkel and ABBA and stuff over and over. And I was kind of obsessed with listening to music. And I remember really wanting to play an instrument. And I remember picking up a neighbor's guitar and just like figuring out how to play like the James Bond theme on it. But I couldn't figure out why it wasn't loud. You know, it was like an electric guitar, but it wasn't plugged in. And I didn't understand any of that. And, you know, my cousin got a guitar and I thought, oh, this is great. I can play this. And then I started playing it. I'm like, this doesn't sound like what I think guitarists should sound like. It didn't sound electric. And then at the ripe old age of 13, I figured, hey, other people are already learning how to play this. I'm already too late. I should just not even try. And now I just want to reach back in time and like smack myself upside the head. But I didn't take an instrument in high school. I just thought, you know, that was for people who wanted to play clarinet and stuff. And it wasn't until I was in college and had roommates that were in a band, and they just would like practice in the living room. And one was a bassist, one was a guitarist, and they would just kind of jam on this like new wave stuff. They really liked the Red Hot Chili Peppers when they were, you know, hot in the late 80s, early 90s. And this is a kind of funny thing, but they didn't have a drummer, but they wanted a jam, and they kind of encouraged me. You know, I'm like, you know, I always kind of wanted to be a drummer. And they're like, well, get out some pots and pans. And so I literally, my music playing debut was on pots and pans and beer bottles, learning how to play drums in the living room of that apartment in San Diego. And I was so inspired that I bought a drum kit. And for the next few years, took lessons and went and jammed in warehouses and stuff, and had a three-piece there of my own for a little while with a friend and a guitarist who eventually moved away, and then kind of left that for a long time. And it wasn't until I had kids of my own, like 10 years plus later. Of course, I missed playing, but I didn't really have an opportunity. And I thought, you know what? I want my kids to be musical. I want them to see what it looks like to practice and to learn an instrument and know the joy of it and like witness it, because, you know, I don't know if you have any kids, but they learn so much more by watching you than anything you will ever tell them. It doesn't matter what you tell them. They only learn by example. And that starts really early. So I thought, you know what? I'm just going to buy a guitar and I'm going to learn how to play guitar and I'm going to show them what it looks like to learn an instrument so that they kind of grow up going, oh, okay, this is normal. And I immediately started writing on it. I started writing songs and then quickly switched to an electric guitar and was so excited about it. Writing songs, and GarageBand had just came out, and I'm like, I can totally record this. And within, like, I guess it was a couple of years of buying that first electric guitar, I put out my first self-produced full-length album after teaching myself how to record, engineer, mix, and master.
Oh my God, that's amazing. Well, let's back up a little bit, because I am actually interested. I think all roads lead to Rome.
Yeah.
And I'm interested to hear about when you said that you went away from it for a while. Like, what can you just kind of tell us a little bit, like, what happened?
I moved. Moved from San Diego, got married, moved, and lived in San Francisco in a flat and didn't have any place to play or put the drums, and just kind of, they just sat in the garage for a long time. And I never really went back to them, even though even now I miss playing drums. But
so were you thinking, like, I have to be quote unquote sensible and I just need to kind of, like,
yeah,
join the real world and get, you know, a real job and support the family and that kind of thing?
Yes. And I did that, but I always in the back of my mind thought that I would go back to it someday, and someday never comes is the thing. Yeah, I did, you know, and I stopped going to concerts and I stopped. It's one of those things where you realize at some point in your life that, you know, you never find time, you only make time. So you have to decide what's important to you and carve out time and space and make an effort for the things that are important to you. So I said, you know what, I don't have anybody to go to concerts with, but I miss them. So I'm just going to start going by myself. And it was just one of those things where you have to just kind of get over yourself and get over the idea that somebody's going to walk up to you and wave a magic wand and make all your dreams come true. You have to figure it out on your own. So if I had really, really wanted to play drums, I probably could have arranged something, but I don't know.
Do you feel like if I was going to be more serious about it, I should have gone to music school, or was there any thought towards that?
No, I never thought about music school, because music was always something that I was interested in. But in my head, I always thought of, well, if you're a musician, that's your job, that's your vocation, that's what you do, and you're 100% all in on that. But I was pursuing a job in graphic design. I went back to school for graphic design, even though I'd already done it professionally for a few years. Then I found myself in IT, and I've been doing that now for a couple of decades. So, and at some point I turned around and said, oh, I should stop pursuing my graphic design goal, because I already have a career. And graphic design turned into web design and turned into photography. And now I still do all my own website design and photography and logo design and stuff. So it all still is part of me. It all still manifests itself somehow. I always say no education is ever wasted. You just don't always know how it's going to manifest later on.
Yeah. And I think that's a really good point, because, you know, I've had people on here that have had, you know, a lot of musical training / education. And I've had people that have no, you know, formal training or music school graduation. I'm sorry, music school, like, you know, went to university for music, that type of thing. And it's it's always kind of a 50-50. Like there's, I'm yet unconvinced whether or not you actually have to go to music school in order to quote unquote pursue a professional career in music, because there's people that have and there's people that haven't on both sides of the coin. So what's your thoughts on that? I'm curious.
Well, I've been looking for that answer myself. I mean, we just interviewed this week Callie Marie, who's a producer. And
just tell the listeners real quick about your podcast so they know what you're talking about.
Oh, the podcast, it's called Indie Music Podcast. We've been doing it since December, and we just uploaded episode 19 tonight, and that's going to be live. It's probably live right now, and it's at indiemusiccast.com. It's also on Spotify, Stitcher, all of the places that you normally listen to podcasts, and it's about half an hour. It's very conversational, and I had somebody even at work come up to me and go, hey, I was listening to your podcast, and it was really cool that it's not like people telling you something. It was like just listening to you have a really interesting conversation. And I'm like, well, that's good, because that's kind of what it is. This, my friend Doug, who has a studio called Resonance Studio, and he lives in Indiana. And we just hooked up on Twitter and decided to do a podcast. And so we've been doing a podcast.
I love it. That's awesome. I'm excited. I'm excited to check it out and have our listeners check it out. So you were talking about you had an interview.
Oh, yeah. So this composer and producer, her name is Callie Marie, and she went to school in Leeds and got a master's in music production. And I didn't quite get to the question of, well, do you think it was worth it to go to school? Because for her, it did seem like it was worth it. But it was also circumstances around being there with people that she already knew and played music with. So it was kind of it wasn't so much of a yes or no. So it was kind of a complicated question, but from all the things I've heard, I think it depends on what area in the vast spectrum of music careers you are interested in. Like, for instance, if you want to be a recording engineer, you probably are better off getting a job at a studio and learning it yourself in person, like the old apprentice style kind of thing, rather than going and learning at a school where they might teach you on equipment that you may never see in real life and you may not get enough real world experience. That's just what I've heard anecdotally. Like I said, I don't think any education is ever wasted. I think it manifests itself in ways you don't expect. But as far as the trade-off of going to school for that, I think it's probably not necessary for most people, depending on what their goals are. And I know that's kind of a fake wishy-washy answer, but
no, I think it's great. And I think it's really interesting because, you know, there's different reasons that people will go to music school. But what I do think, and what I've heard, and I'm curious of your thoughts on this, is that I think 20-30 years ago, it seemed like unless you were going to be like Motley Crue, you really had, it was kind of like, this is what you did. You went to music school and you did, you know, you did your 4 years undergrad, whatever. And then you went out and basically tried to break into whatever.
Yeah. And I think that's almost like a blanket statement that could be applied across all industries, not just music, but where it used to be, you know, you go to school, you get then you graduate and you get a job in the field that you studied. And what we've seen over the last few decades is that becomes less and less true, and more people go to school and they get out and there isn't a job waiting for them. And they end up doing something that's completely unrelated to what they studied. And then they're saddled with a bunch of student debt that they have to pay off. And I think that for a lot of people, you know, you could spend those 4 years earning money doing something in your field, some related job in your field, and learning on the job. I mean, every job that I've ever had, I've learned all the skills on the job or by seeking out education some other way, or, you know, taking online courses, or, you know, finding a mentor or a colleague who you can learn from, or just doing stuff at home on your own until you figure it out. I know not everybody not everybody's self-motivated to that degree, or obsessive or crazy or whatever you want to call it. Like, I'm taking 4 online courses right now because I'm just a crazy person who likes to learn all the time while working full-time from home.
That's awesome. Well, and I think, I mean, and just more for sake of clarification, and I think, you know, our listeners probably know this, but this is, and what I'm trying to impart is, this is separate from learning your craft. Like, I'm talking about, like, when you, like, learning your craft, I don't think you can skip out on. Like, you need to learn
how to. That's a really good distinction.
Yeah,
yes.
You need to learn your instrument. You need to learn chord progressions. You need to learn, even that can be a little bit more flexible. You know, people sometimes, you know, can't read any music whatsoever, but they have an incredible ear. They can do, but it's still like, you need to know the nuts and bolts. You know, I think that goes without saying.
Right. You either have to have that kind of like gift, or you need to have that craft. Yeah, no, I tell my kids and people all this all the time. You can't, there's no jumping to the finish line. You can't skip the steps. It always, you only see the success. You don't see the woodshedding and the nights of the long nights of practice and being at step one, moving to step two. You don't see that, because that all takes place in private for the most part. What you see are the people who've already gotten to the point where they're performing live, or they're in a video, or they're teaching something. You know, I mean, they've already spent the 10 years prior to that learning their craft. So yeah, you're right. It's a good distinction. And those people, a lot of them now are making their own career by, you know, doing online courses or whatnot. It's kind of tough, but I don't think you need school for that.
Yeah. And the other thing is too, is, and I think this is really interesting for you talking about, that's, I'm really glad I was asking you about what you did when you quote unquote left music, which you really didn't, but you just sort of, you know, you moved into different areas. But as you were sharing, and I'd like you to kind of talk a little bit more about it, and that thing about all roads lead to Rome, like everything that you're doing and you have done, like the graphic design, IT, photography, like everything, that all leads to essential skills that you need now as a music entrepreneur.
Yeah. And, you know, none of those things I learned with a goal in mind, other than I just enjoyed doing them. And I like to get to a point where I feel confident in whatever it is that I'm learning, that I feel like, okay, I have this kind of under my belt. Now I can move on to the next thing. But, you know, I was just having this conversation with somebody yesterday that a lot of things only make sense in hindsight. Like, career paths these days are so crooked and convoluted that they only make sense looking backwards. They never make sense looking forwards. You would never know, you know, graduating high school, where you're going to end up when you're 45. Even if you thought you did, even if you tried really hard to end up in this one particular spot, you have no idea.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, because the landscape keeps changing and the rules keep changing. And I think, yeah, if you had said to me upon graduation, like, you better know how to build a web page, I'd be like, what's a web page? But, you know, like, exactly what you're saying, like, skills that I had no idea would actually apply, like, you know, business administration, like things like that, that again.
Boy, I wish I learned that. I spent all last year learning business administration, how to do financial stuff. And yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's kind of wild how it all is now sort of dovetailed into that. So it's interesting though, because, and I'd like you to just talk a little bit more about it. So you said your return to music was, and I'm putting words in your mouth, but basically it was inspired by your kids. Yeah.
Yeah. It was a conscious decision. And I almost want to say it was an excuse, because I did, like I said, I missed music. And it was like, yes, you're right to say I left music, but music never left me. So it was always there in the back of my mind, something that I wanted to return to somehow. And I don't know why it occurred to me, like, oh, I could just finally buy that guitar that I wanted when I was 13 and play that instead of the drums. I don't know. I was just fixated on where am I going to set up a drum set and play that? So I did. Yeah. So I bought an acoustic guitar. I had that for, I want to say, a year before I bought the electric guitar. And then it was just like, boom, that's when I started learning how to record and stuff. But yeah, traded the traded my my acoustic guitar for an amplifier.
Now, where were you learning all this? Like, where was all the
self-taught mostly?
Okay.
So this was, I bought my first guitar. I was 36. By 37, I bought the electric guitar and then a bass. And then by 40, I had put out my own self-produced full length. And that was in 2009.
And when you say self-taught, what is, can you be more specific?
Yeah, this was before the explosion of YouTube. So in terms of like just trying to figure out how to get music out of a guitar and into a computer, I think GarageBand was at like version 2, I want to say. And there were not as many options as there are now, but it was still had just become available to buy for, you know, less than $200, an audio interface and plug a guitar into it. And then, you know, I had GarageBand, and then somebody gave me a copy of Logic and said, oh, if you're going to be serious about this, here, try this. And so I immediately switched over to Logic, and then I bought a legitimate copy of Logic, and I've been on Logic ever since.
That's great. That's great. And again, it's just sort of been all your own.
Yeah. I mean, I pick up stuff here and there whenever the Pensado's place was the first kind of online videos that I watched that talked about how to use this plugin and how to do this kind of recording. And I think that's still going on. But now there's a whole kind of like cottage industry of online videos and courses and YouTube content about how to record anything and everything.
Yeah, I think that's so interesting. And I mean, just to give you perspective, like I had a very classical background.
Okay.
And I, you know, classical pianist, and then later on was like voice, like opera training kind of thing. And
nice.
Yes, but what happened was, and I think you'll totally laugh, is like I left music because I was sort of in despair, because I was like, my path that I perceived was so narrow and so not elitist, that's not the right word, exclusive. It was like you had to be this sort of like prodigy.
Right. I can see
almost
that.
Like, you know, figure skating or something, like you couldn't.
Right.
And it was, you had to really stay within the lines, right, of, you know, you're performing somebody else's work. So you have to emulate every single, and in classical music, you know, you are essentially married to the sheet music, and that every notation is must be honored, etc. You know what I mean? So as a result, I was literally paralyzed. So it was like all this quote unquote education or background, it didn't serve me. It only sort of just gave me this perfectionistic paralysis that ultimately kind of drove me away from it.
Now, how did you find your way into that? Did your parents?
It was all parents. It was all parents. Like, age 6 on. Now I'm so happy I have it. Right? Like
that's what people
yeah,
say.
Yeah, I'm like, "Woo," cuz now I'm like, "Okay, now I can actually apply it." But when I, you know, when I was sort of like in my 20s and or late teens, it was just sort of like, "Yeah, well, this is, unless I get into the conservatory, there's nothing. I can't. There's nothing. It's all or nothing."
Right. It's a narrow path.
Yeah. So it is really interesting to hear like that this, you had sort of this different path, but you went away from it and for different reasons, but then came back to it and started essentially teaching yourself. And I have to say, I like admire the sense that you were willing to dive into it and didn't have, it sounds like, and you can tell me this, but it sounds like you didn't have the inhibition.
No, I didn't. And I will say, I wish I had formal training. I wish that I had taken music classes as a kid or had that opportunity or even just took a band class and learned how to, you know, read notes. You know, I don't know how to read music. But I wish I did. But I can totally see your point, because I know that my kids ended up, two of the three of my kids ended up going to the local performing arts school and getting into jazz band and jazz choir. And one of them, who was very good on saxophone, got frustrated and quit the jazz band because the jazz teacher was kind of grooming them all to be, you know, studio musicians and learn all this eclectic stuff and play really hard music that was not really enjoyable to listen to and apparently wasn't enjoyable to play either. But so a lot of that comes from that, the kind of like narrow focus that if you don't choose your own path, somebody's going to choose it for you. And in those kind of narrow focus situations, they're only going to choose the path that they know that you could be on. But there's such an infinite array of things you can do in the field of music, as probably you could in most fields, but you don't know until you get there how many different things you could do. You know, all you see is what you see on TV or wherever. You don't know until you get there how many different kind of, you know, studio jobs even there are, let alone how many instruments you could play or what you could do with an instrument. But it doesn't mean you're going to make a living playing the triangle or something, right? You know.
Well, and also while you were talking, I had a flashback to that movie Whiplash. You remember that?
Oh, I've seen it a few times. That's such a great movie.
Such a great movie. But it's like, you know, we can all like relate in some way. I thankfully my music teacher growing up wasn't like that, but
you didn't throw cymbals at
no
you?
But I did briefly have a stint, so sort of like after I left my teacher and went elsewhere, I did have a brief stint with a insanely strict piano teacher who used to like wrap my knuckles with a ruler.
Ooh. Ouch.
So it's just like, yeah, I think that was at the point that I was like, I really don't think I'm cut out for this.
Yeah.
Well, I want to hear more about your, because this is what's so interesting, and I really love your story because, again, you kind of have this real passion and like fearlessness about not only a deep dive into learning your craft, but also like self-producing and self-releasing your music. So tell me more about that.
Well, I will say that the hardest part of that was singing on my own productions, because that wasn't something, well, maybe I did envision that. I always kind of wanted to be Joe Elliott more than I wanted to be Phil Collin. But yeah, there was just a point where, like I said, when I felt like I was missing out on concerts, and I'm just like, you know what, it's just me, but I'm just going to go, even if nobody else I know likes this music or goes. At some point I thought, you know, unless I have people that can come over whenever I need them to, because this was before it was really feasible to, you know, easily trade files over the internet. But I was like, I guess I'm just going to have to play all these instruments myself. So, you know, I learned how to arrange MIDI drums, and then I started using recorded drum loops. But then I learned enough guitar to record, and I learned enough bass to record, because even though you can kind of fake it with the low strings of a guitar and fake a bass line, it's much better if you use an actual bass. And then learning to sing well enough to record. And I did at some point take some vocal lessons for about a year. I took vocal lessons, but that was not that long ago. That was long after I'd, you know, had a few albums and EPs under my belt. I just felt like that was the only way I was going to get it out there, because I couldn't really envision any other way of, because I was recording everything ad hoc. I mean, I was, you know, I had young kids, had a full-time job, never really had an idea of when I was going to be able to record something or put it together. And so because it was all ad hoc, I couldn't see any other way of doing it. Although even at the outset, I did envision, and this was back when I was on MySpace trying to make a name for myself, I did envision having collaborators. That's part of the army of Mojo's Army. I found an old thing I'd written that I would eventually have an army of collaborators. I didn't really try to do that. It just kind of happened. And at one point, after doing my DIY music chat on Twitter for a few years, I did find myself, without even trying, just collaborating with a bunch of people on a bunch of different projects and trading files back and forth over the internet and taking turns mixing and producing, and even put out a full length album with a couple of good friends that I only know through social media, and we've never actually met in person, but we put out an 11 song full length album in the last year.
That's so cool. I love that. That's so great. Let's talk a little bit more about like the DIY music chat. So was that your baby that you started on Twitter?
Funnily enough, it was not. It was something that I took over from somebody else who's no longer pursuing music. It was called the Home Recording Chat. And it was right when, like, a bunch of us were kind of on Twitter trying to figure out how to do home recording. And he came up with the idea. Well, we were both on and off in this chat called the Go Girls, the GG Music Chat, run by Madeline Sklar, who's now a kind of a big deal in the Twitterverse. Well, she used to run this Go Girls music chat for independent women musicians, and it was open to, you know, men too, but it was primarily focused on helping women, you know, young women find out how to do home recording and stuff. And we were kind of part of that. So he spun off his own chat called Home Recording Chat, and he did that for a little while, and he was giving it up. And I said, do you mind if I take it over? And he's like, nah. And I did. And I renamed it because it was such a weird hashtag that I didn't feel like it made any sense to anybody. It was like HRC chat or something. It's like, nobody's going to be able to figure out what this is if they just see it. So I kind of came up with a few names. And
Hillary Rodham Clinton
chat. Like, no, get out of here. That's not what this is. So I've renamed it the DIY Music Chat, even though it's kind of long.
Which is great. I love it.
It's self-explanatory. That was kind of what I wanted to do. And then that was like almost 4 years ago. And I've been doing it every week. I do it on my lunch hour at work. And it's become like appointment TV almost for like a whole like core group of people that come on and just, you know, we only know each other through the internet. I think some of them are kind of famous, but I don't want to say it. And they're just really cool, nice people. And a lot of us have, you know, not only answered each other's questions, but collaborated on. So I really wanted to mention that. I didn't start the chat to act like an expert. I started the chat because every week I would have a question that I kind of wanted to crowdsource the answer to. So any topic was always something that I needed to know. So I'm like, hey, let's throw this out there as a topic and see who has the best recording interface and how do you use it? And, you know, then it kind of became this great discussion, but it was always something that I kind of wanted to know that week. So that was, I was kind of crowdsourcing the information for moving forward.
Yeah, I'm sort of a lurker.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, I'm kind of a lurker. I know I've like participated a couple of times, but I more like to just kind of like lurk around and see, you know, what the topics are and what people are discussing.
Well, I think, and I go back and forth on this about, you know, picking a topic ahead of time. Half the time I pick the topic like an hour before or less. Sometimes I'll announce it ahead of time, but I feel like it's so weird because if you announce it ahead of time, then people will come who want to talk about that, but people will go, oh, I don't want to talk about that. And then they don't bother showing up. Other times I will like not pick a topic and then there will become a topic and I'm happy to pivot because I really do moderate it like a conversation. Like I will take it wherever the conversation wants to go. I'll do that. If people don't want to talk about what I picked, you know, happy to change the subject. But it does bum me out a little bit when people who I know want to come don't say anything because it's not really meant to be an exclusive single topic focused thing. It's meant to be kind of like a collaborative, like a real chat room. Like everybody's just saying, hey, and what are you working on? And you know what I mean? And I really care about these guys. They really have become very dear to me, this group of regulars.
That's great. That's so great. Well, let's talk a little bit about just sort of the tech aspect and the learning aspect, because I do think that the internet is amazing in terms of being able to, it's an incredible, the words don't even begin to describe like the incredible tool that we have at our fingertips. But I think sometimes, and I'd like you to kind of talk about this, that there's these rabbit holes that you can go down and...
Oh, yes. No, tell me more. I don't know what that means. Rabbit hole.
Right.
Yeah.
And like and one of the things that I found, so I'm like a synth pop songwriter, producer, and Logic is my poison. And you can go down like insane rabbit holes and levels of knowledge, or feel that you have to have these like levels of knowledge just to like why aren't you designing your own synth kind of thing? And you're like, I just like the plugin. So I wanted you to talk about that. Like, how do you navigate it? How do you kind of draw the line? Like, because I think too, like I said, that the fact that you have this amazing Mojo's army of collaborators, but you also very much are the indie musician in that, like you said, like you essentially played the instruments and self-released. So how do you just talk about that a little bit?
Well, that's a good point. And I think there's even a rabbit hole of rabbit holes, like, yeah. Like how you get on YouTube and you're looking for, okay, you just open up YouTube and like, it's already got recommendations for you. And I've learned to just say, save to watch later. Otherwise, you know, you'll be on YouTube for 5 hours, you know, watching video after video of stuff that you may not really need to know these things. Some of that stuff you have to figure out for yourself. But I do think, I think there's two aspects of it. One is, I think you do need to go down rabbit holes once in a while. You need to do deep dives into things that matter to you, that are important to you, until you kind of feel like you have a handle on them. But I also think that the rabbit holes turn into a form of procrastination at some point, where, you know, if your doppelganger was standing over your shoulder watching you, they'd be going like, you know, you should be doing the thing, not watching somebody else do a video of the thing, because you'll learn more, you'll retain it longer, it'll be more enjoyable, and ultimately it'll be more productive. Because I do think with just the amount of information that's out there, you can go swimming and get lost in that sea really easily. But it's nice that it's there. I think it's, you know, it's wonderful. But I do think that you have to be careful to recognize when you're falling into the trap of learning more than you needed to know about something that you really should just be getting hands on and doing.
So how do you draw that line? Like, how do you do that? Like, what's your,
I think you just have to know your limitations and know when enough is enough. Because I'm 100% speaking from experience on this, about just like realizing like, okay, how many plug-in videos can you watch? How many videos can you watch on how to use a compressor before you really just have to like pull up your song and start tweaking some knobs until you get the sound that you want? But yeah, as far as like synths, yeah, you can get lost in there and like spend an entire day like making one sound, and then your day is gone and you still don't have a song. But on the other hand, you'll probably learn something. You probably had some fun, and you probably now have a new patch that you can use next time. I guess to bring it back around and answer the question, I think it's good to go on these tangents and do deep dives, but it's also important to know yourself well enough to know, to recognize when you probably should just dial it back and get your hands dirty on something. But I think what helps with that is having clearly defined intentions for whatever it is you're working on. Like, I like to say that it's good to have a mission statement for every project. And a mission statement is just a fancy way of saying, what does success look like to you? So I need to make a patch. Well, what does success look like to you? How will you know when you've got it? How will you know when you're done? And if you don't have that defined when you start your little journey, then you're just going to wander in the forest for a long time.
That's really great. That's a great, great point. I mean, what I've learned is like, especially as a woman producer, I really like sort of having the control of being able to kind of produce my own tracks.
Right.
And not having some dude tell me what to do. But yeah, I have learned from trial and error, mostly error, that I do need a good producer to mix and master. Like that's my sort of hubris. Like I've learned, like I can't detach enough from the project to really hear it and to hear certain things.
I agree. I think a lot of people fall into that trap that they think that they can do everything, but just because you can do a thing doesn't mean you should do a thing. And it's always good to get, you know, extra ears on it. I like to run things past people, and people are constantly running things past me because you just want to get somebody else's opinion. You don't have to run with their opinion, but it's good to get their opinion. Like when they go like, oh, the bass is really too loud, then you either go, oh, it's perfect, or you go, oh, maybe my room's not treated as well as I thought. You know what I mean? it's just good to get another opinion so that you kind of have another angle of looking at something. Because, you know, like the Aesop's fable, the dice can't read its own spots, you know?
I like that. Well, we're running short on time, but I just wanted to ask you, you know, sort of the final thoughts is with, you have this great group online of people with the DIY musician chat. And right now we're in a pandemic, in case you didn't know.
Yes. No, I didn't know. Toilet paper is everywhere.
I know. No. Right. Exactly. And I wanted to hear, you've taken the temperature of the room of indie artists and musicians and, yeah. and what's kind of your take on everything that's happening?
Well, I think that as people accept that they're not going to be gigging out and they're not going to be, you know, working out, I think that a lot of people are now turning to, you know, the woodshed. And I think that there's going to be, when everybody gets to go back outside and play, there's going to be this explosion of music to hear and to see. And I am loving that so many people have quickly pivoted to doing online concerts. I've watched some great Facebook Live shows from people that I wouldn't get to see because they live in different states. And I don't get to go to their gigs, but now I can watch them online because they're kind of forced to do that. Instead of playing their local venue, they're probably not making much money doing that, if any, but they're having fun. They're working on their craft. And I think that a lot of people are working on their craft, writing new songs. And in the long run, I think all the creatives are going to be better for this. They'll have more practice under their belt. They'll have more songs to play. They'll have just more chops when they get back out there. It will be interesting to see how many people pivot into something completely different as a result of this. But yeah, it's an interesting time, but I think that creatives are going to continue to work on their crafts and in the long run will probably be better for it. We're going to have an explosion of art very soon.
That's fantastic. What's your own personal experience been going through this?
Well, for me, I'm actually still working full-time remotely. So I'm taking this opportunity to do some online classes in sync licensing and song arranging, because I have a bunch of unfinished projects that I haven't gotten back to, and I need to get those out the door. And yeah, I've been mixing and mastering other people's stuff and producing other people's stuff, and I'd like to get back to making my own. So this is kind of a path to do that. So that's what I'm working on now.
Cool. And then finally, just tell people how they can find you, how they can get in touch with you.
Oh, yeah. I'm always on Twitter, Mojo's Army. That's the same for Instagram, and at mojosarmy.com. Also, I have the Indie Music Podcast at indiemusiccast.com that I do with Doug Reynolds. I don't think I'm hard to find, but I'm also doing a lot of interviews that I post on mojosarmy.com. So you can go check that out, and a lot of album reviews that I do there, too.
Cool. And then your music is on Spotify?
Spotify and Bandcamp. Mojosarmy.bandcamp.com is a good place to find a lot of stuff.
Cool. Well, thank you so much, Mojo. I'm so appreciative that you took the time. It was so fun to talk to you.
Thank you. I really appreciate this opportunity.
Yay.
What a great conversation. I really enjoyed it.
That was awesome, huh?
Awesomeness indeed. Thank you so much to Mojo for a great interview, great chat. Again, you can find him at mojosarmy.com, Twitter handle and Instagram handle at Mojo's Army. His indie music podcast is indiemusiccast.com or on wherever you get your lovely podcasts. So thus ends another week of Hey, How'd You Get That Music Job? I am your hostess again with the mostess, L. Ariel. You can find us at lariel.com/podcast. That's right. We've moved the podcast to the L. Ariel Music website. You can follow me on the Instagram and the Twitter and even the TikTok, believe it or not, at L-A-R-I-E-L Music. Okay, my darlings, take good care, be safe, be well, and remember to keep on hustling, pursue that dream, and don't you dare give up.